All right. Hey, we're so glad to have Zach Goodall back on the show. Swamp 24/7, part of obviously the 24/7 Sports Network. Same haircut that makes Cousin Shane jealous. Zach, how you been, buddy?
Mike, I've been great. I'm so thrilled to be back, A, with you, and B, covering the Gators. It's funny how things work out. Spent a year away covering the NFL, and somehow couldn't even get out of Gainesville. I was doing the drive up to Jacksonville, so it was calling for me.
Yeah, and when you left, you know, let's be honest, it was a lot of doom and gloom. And I admit, I've said this many times, even though I thought all offseason last year, I thought Florida was going to be much better. And then the first month happened, I said, oh God, there's no way Billy Napier survives this. What is it like now coming back to a program that is on the upswing? And what's the confidence level that they could continue that into 2025?
I go back and forth on it. I mean, I look at what they accomplished at the end of last year, and while I understand that when you put it in these terms, it's not meeting Florida fans' expectations, but they pulled off Billy Napier's first 3-plus game win streak against FBS opponents in 3 years to end the year, and they did it convincingly with two top 25 wins. They have every reason, I think, to be motivated and to believe in what they're doing. That's really what it comes down to, though. Is how much are they still willing to make adjustments on things that, you know, I would still say were not up to par last year. I think the offense still could have been better, even with DJ Lagway's emergence. There's still things that I believe handicap this offense from a schematic and play calling standpoint. And while we see the belief, obviously, across the roster, the talent that's brought in, to me, that also applies to Billy Napier. I think he's radiating a sense of belief that his systems that he's put in place and worked very hard to put in place for the past 3 years are working. Graham Hall and I got to catch up with him on my second day on the job. Actually, we had an exclusive with him, and he said very bluntly that play calling in their offensive system as a whole, the multiple coordinators, the way they lay things out during the week, is something that he really has conviction about. So to me, the proof is in the pudding with this roster. I think that it's as talented as it's been, and that this team can win big games, can beat tough opponents. Will they get in their own way, or will they be willing to continue, you know, adapting and making changes? Or are they so entrenched in what they believe that they're just going to stick to it? And I think that's going to be the tale of the season.
Yeah, and I picked up some fascinating nuggets over at Swamp 24/7. This is courtesy of your writing. Gators had 13 transfers out. That's the fewest they've had in an offseason under Billy Napier. So that's obviously a sign that the players are buying in. And, you know, in this world of NIL transfer portal, you know, we're not naive. They saved money by not firing Billy Napier. And what do you know? The recruiting, you know, went through the ceiling. And there was many key players that could be on their way to the NFL right now. They're back for another season. So certainly, you know, behind the scenes, there's belief in Billy Napier and there's financial support to back it up. Could that be, how big could that be for next season and moving forward under Billy Napier?
Monumental. To the point of his systems, like, I got to give credit where it's due. I think recruiting has shown now the past couple of cycles, the 2 5-stars with Lagway and LJ McCray the year before, and the run while they were winning games at the end of this past season, that put them up into, I believe, the number 8 class when all was said and done. Like, I do think that those things are working out. The ability to retain talent was certainly a problem in the past. I think everyone would immediately think of Trevor Etienne the season before. Clearly, financially, whether it be from not moving on from Billy Napier or getting Florida victorious and other NIL partners and their internal system that I know they've still been working on this year. Player retention has become something that they can do. It just wasn't something that they were very good at before. And right, to those 13 transfers that left, that's by far the fewest. So is there 5 transfers added, because they were able to hold on to some of these players like Caleb Banks, Tyreek Sapp, Austin Barber, and Jake Slaughter, the latter being an All-American last year. I think all of those players reasonably could have been drafted. Instead, they come back as veteran leaders of the team and certainly some of their most talented players, and they're surrounding them with continually, again, these recruits that have now some of them going into year 2, even year 3, and the players that they're able to retain overall, it's If you were to ask me for the single biggest strength of Billy Napier's tenure, it has been just the overall roster churn. It's taken a long time. I think that fans were a little bit upset with how slow it could have been, or it was, I should say. But at this point, that this is what they've been building toward, and I think that this roster, just in a vacuum, can go head to head with really a lot of the teams in the SEC.
Well, we don't just pump sunshine either on this channel, as you're well aware, but there was a lot of Florida fans upset. Billy Napier's keeping the play calling. I know they've changed OC Russ Callaway now, and they recently added Steve Spurrier Jr., which is interesting. But what's your take on Billy Napier keeping the play calling? And I was kind of surprised, Zach, that even though they had the hot finish to the season, that there were so many fans that were upset. And I even saw some that were like, you know, they're totally back on board. And then they heard this news and they said, oh God, this is not going to end well.
Yeah, I mean, and you know, I still have, I don't want to say I have catching up to do, but like there's a lot in my short time coming back to this. Like I missed last year. I didn't get to see all of the ins and outs of the offense, but for my time covering the team and based on my review last year, I still feel as though that there's something left to be desired with the way this passing offense in particular works. I think that Florida can run the ball on most teams. What does that do you in 2025 at this point? We know that you need to be dynamic both ways. You need to be able to have a passing game that can win you games when you're not able to churn it out on the ground. You've got to be able to win through the air. And this passing offense has just been middle of the pack at best. Even when DJ Lagway's out there, they still sometimes struggle with efficiency. I know that fans get upset with, you know, third and middle distance to go and they're targeting behind the sticks, but that is really just that's always been the Billy Napier offense. They're methodical. They want to churn out long drives. They want to keep opposing offenses off the field, and it's just the way they do it. I don't see that changing, obviously, with Billy Napier holding on to play calling. I think that speaks for itself, but they'll make some tweaks. You know, DJ Lagway is a different kind of quarterback than Graham Mertz, and I'm sure they're going to lean into his ability to not only run the ball, but extend pockets, move pockets, and maybe change protection based on his athleticism. But at the end of the day, the route concepts are the route concepts. And there are a lot of half field reads where players end up in similar spots. If that one read's not there, all of a sudden the quarterback's got really narrow margins to work within. That's just kind of how this offense has operated. And I understand why that would upset fans, especially now that they've got this seemingly generational quarterback and 3 years of results with, I mean, we say three different quarterbacks, Anthony Richardson, Graham Mertz, and DJ Lagway, but you can get into the multiple quarterbacks they've had to start due to injuries otherwise. At the end of the day, not, the passing offense has been middling at best, and I understand the skepticism even with someone that is as talented as DJ Lagway back there. Could the play calling sometimes even do more harm than good?
And then we've already seen all the other angst, I guess you could say, with defensive backs coach Will Harris leaving for Miami, and he started offering Florida commits already, which, hey, that's his job. He works for Miami now, but right before spring football, how's that being received among Gator Nation?
I think they're a little angsty now about that particular situation and just Will Harris going to Miami. It's interesting. I saw his comment today in his first press conference with the Hurricanes saying that straight up Florida wasn't prepared to play Cam Ward last year. And I threw it on our message board just to, you know, let everyone know that Will Harris was not going to the NFL as had been rumored. And the first response was, well, that gives me a lot of optimism that they're not going to be ready for DJ Lagway next year, which, you know, valid. But also I do think that comes from a place of emotion, which is also valid. Florida was really quick to have a replacement lined up with Deron Wilson, someone that they're obviously familiar with. He was either a GA or quality control coach back in 2022 when the staff first got here. So I do think fans moved on pretty quickly, but at the same time, people were wondering, oh, is he going to stay at Miami? Is he going to move to the NFL after all? But it looks like Florida fans will be seeing him again soon.
And what if anything can you tell us about they just hired a GM, Nick Polk from the Atlanta Falcons, and I saw there was some speculation. I don't know, you would know better than I, but apparently Jim Nagy, there was some consideration there, who obviously Oklahoma just hired for the same role. What if anything can you tell us about Nick Polk, and what can Florida fans expect from his GM role?
Yeah, it's my understanding that Polk, Nagy, and at least two or three other people. I know that there were before I came back, reports of at least four candidates in like December that had interviewed for this role, and it ended up being multiple. They hired, in addition to Polk, Ben Elsner from the 33rd team, who's more of a young up-and-comer. That company had its content creation side and its consultation side. I believe he was on the consulting part of it. But they're trying to split this up into a couple pieces. I'm not even sure if they're done adding to this, what they call a front office, just like the NFL. But yeah, Nick Polk will be leading that. It really comes down to managing the cap at this point and managing the settlement, treating it like an NFL team and understanding. I mean, everyone's talking about the 20.5 million this year, right? Well, what is it going to be next year? What's it going to be in 5 years? And how are we going to set up our contracts based on positional value, based on, I mean, the chance of knowing that a player is going to be a three and done, right? I think that there are going to be a lot of variables into how they design these deals for players. How do they get them all to stay long term and avoid the threats of transfer? I'm sure this will all be part of it. And, you know, we talk about Billy Napier with play calling, right? And fans wanting him to take that off his plate. I certainly see GMing, for lack of a better term, as something that a coach just can't do. I don't think that that's something that would be feasible for any coach at any level in college football at this point, because it's a totally new game. And that's what you see, whether it's Polk, Nagy doesn't have experience working caps like that. He was a previous scout and, you know, they didn't pay people to go to the Senior Bowl, so I find that one a bit interesting. But regardless, you see them pulling these NFL influenced people into the college ranks for exactly that, because they have the familiarity with how the cap system works, how to create these contracts. And I think that's really all it comes down to. I'm sure that Nick Polk will have a say in some scouting and maybe not recruiting itself, but like pitching into the recruiting effort by offering his thoughts on player X, Y, and Z, what their value is. But at the end of the day, I see him and Elsner, and if they add anyone else, really honing in on the money aspect, which is obviously so crucial at this point.
Well, obviously, what everybody is going to focus on this offseason when it comes to Florida is DJ Lagway. Just what an incredible talent he is. And by the end of the season, I mean, he may be regarded as the best quarterback in the SEC, maybe the country. But, you know, that's not a guarantee because there are a lot of really good quarterbacks in the conference. But one, I'm already seeing this offseason discussion, Zach. It's South Carolina fans touting Lenore Sellers, with Florida fans touting DJ Lagway, and I honestly I don't think there's a wrong answer between them. But could you make the case or why DJ Lagway could be better than not only Lenore Sellers but any quarterback in the SEC in 2025?
I mean, he's truly just so dynamic and so built too, to put it like that, to step in as an 18 or maybe 19-year-old freshman. And he was damn near 240, if not 240, at a legitimate 6'3". I mean, like, you could confuse him as someone that could play really any position, in terms of ones that move around like that, maybe not a lineman. But he's just, and to be that big yet so athletic, to have the arm power, accuracy, touch that he has too. His deep ball touch, I don't think, gets enough credit. It's not just being able to go and throw it 60 yards really fast or whatever the case may be, but he also knows how to put touch on it to put that ball exactly where it needs to go to fall softly into his receiver's hands down the field. Now, is he a perfect passer? No, I do think that he needs to work on some of his turnover-worthy throws into more of the intermediate level of the field, but to start with the deep ball accuracy and success that he had, and pair it even with, I don't think he had a ton of hiccups in the short game. So all of a sudden, you're really only concentrating on one level of the field, but you know that he can take you deep and he can also take the things that are underneath in the easy stuff when he needs to. I think he's just overall really advanced for a quarterback of his age. And I know that going back to, gosh, I want to say his junior year of high school, he was the type of kid that was getting up at 4:30, maybe earlier in the morning, to go and start working out, get tape sessions in before high school classes, and then to go and practice later in the day. He's just, in my opinion, Florida fans like to talk about how committed he is to Florida. It's almost unique, in the sense that it doesn't feel like there's a threat to transfer. He just launched a foundation with UF Health in Gainesville, so he seems the type to stick around. But I'm equally, if not more, impressed by the level of commitment he has to this game. You see players all the time. You know that a lot of these recruits and kids are drinking and sleeping football. It's all they do. DJ still finds a way to stand above the rest, from a lot of the players that I've gotten to cover.
Well, that being said, with all the hype around DJ, and it's all warranted, and winning, going 8-5 last year, what is the expectations that most Florida fans, what's it going to take to keep them happy? Because again, like you said earlier, 8-5, that's not the standard at Florida, but the schedule was ridiculous last year, and it may be even tougher this year. So, what's it going to take to keep fans happy, you think?
Yeah, it's certainly not easier. And so I think that without even getting into projecting what the total would be, right? I mean, I do get the sense that a lot of people are looking at this as CFP or bust, but ultimately, you got to start with the same amount of momentum that you ended last year on. You cannot come out slow out of the gate, even if they win some of these games and, don't start 1-2 or with any blowout losses. Like, you've got to look like you've picked up where you left off. And I think that would go a long way to appeasing fans because they've had rough starts really every year they've been here. They've got that Utah win to start things off, and then it immediately slides into the loss with Kentucky. And we could rinse and repeat over the past couple of years about that too. It's got to look different, like it looked different at the end of last year, to start the right way by appeasing fans. And then I think that maybe goals, what people want to see could shift based on what you see from there. But ultimately, again, back to the standards of Florida, and now with a expanded playoff at this point, like, I think most fans would tell you, based on the hype that's being put out this year, it's college football playoffs or bust.
And if they do reach that, it's going to be in large part, I think, to the defense carrying over the momentum that they had, because that kind of gets a little, I know it's not lost on people like you or the Gator fans, but I think the rest of the SEC maybe didn't pay attention how good the defense was against Ole Miss, LSU, Florida State, and an overmatched Tulane team. But they really turned a huge corner late in the season. What's the confidence level with Ron Roberts that'll continue over to 2025?
I think it's pretty high. And so much of that comes down to the retention piece. Again, to get Caleb Banks and Tyreek Sapp back, to me, were two of the most, if not the most impressive aspects of the offseason. Even Jake Slaughter coming back on All-American, he's a local guy, a little bit of an under center or undersized center. So that one may not have surprised me as much. Caleb Banks is an NFL draft prospect, a legitimate one. I think Tyreek Sapp can be too after his explosive year last year. A good one at a minimum. But to get those two pieces back to lead your defensive line, they've got some other experience there as well. George Gums was a low profile transfer acquisition last offseason who ended up, I think he led the team in, no, he had the most defensive snaps. I was confusing stats there for a second, but he did rank second on the team with Sapp in quarterback pressures. So they've got a really, really solidified front. I think they've got a lot of depth there. LJ McCray, the five-star from earlier, I don't envision him starting as a sophomore because they've got so many players there. And that's not to say he won't have a big role. I think it'll be huge. But they've got the depth there. I think you could say the same thing at linebacker. You've got some concerns in the secondary area where it's young and they've dealt with a lot of injuries over the past year. And even into this offseason, there's going to be some guys taking some time to recover. But all things considered, from at least the front seven, it's not only really good at the top, but they've got a lot of really intriguing talents who I do think are ready to contribute and have contributed already. That should make it a really good unit that should match up well, certainly in the tackle box moving forward.
And then last football question I have for you, Zach. A lot of assumptions here, but I assume they're going to a 9-game conference schedule. That again, that's not a given, but it's very close to happening. I think they'll announce that maybe at the spring meetings, but let's assume they go to a 9-game conference schedule annually, and let's assume that they go to the model that I think that they've already put out there and makes the most sense, to where each SEC team has three permanent opponents that they play every year, and then they just rotate the 6 and 6 so they can play everybody every other year. Assuming all that happens, what are the most likely opponents for Florida that would be three annual permanent opponents. We did this exercise this week on the show, and we said Georgia, obviously, and then Florida. It's tough because there's so many. There's a long history with LSU. There's a history with Tennessee. We went Tennessee and South Carolina. Thoughts on that? Is there anyone you think Florida would rather play? Obviously, Georgia's got to stay there, but are there two other ones maybe that Florida should play annually if they go to that format?
Yeah, I'm curious as to who they'd want to play, just because I would hope they wouldn't like put themselves in a box thinking like, oh yeah, we want to play one lower quality SEC team every year, because that's just not, with the way the game's going now, who's to say that that team will be a lower quality team in 2 years, right? I think from the sentimental value, the four teams that you raised make the most sense, and the three I was going to go with are Georgia, LSU, and Tennessee. And really, only to add a selfish level in that. I mean, from Jacksonville, so that game means something to me. And the new stadium going there, obviously, it'll be cool. But also, I mean, man, those environments at Tennessee and LSU, too, they're two alongside the Swamp are among the most unique that I've ever been in. And to be able to guarantee that every 2 years that I'll get to cover those games, give them to me.
Yeah. All right. And then final thing for you. A lot's changed, Zach. We started covering basketball. We're dipping our toes in, but we are still, we don't act like we're basketball experts, so we rely on other people. How far do you think this Florida team can go? Could they make a Final Four? Could they win the whole thing? I mean, at times, Florida to me looks like arguably the best team in the country.
Yeah, and I want to say that I am also like way more football guy than basketball guy, but I've dipped my toes in here, especially with 247. I think that they easily can be a Final Four team. It wouldn't surprise me if they're able to at least push all the way with a good slate in the tournament, because I think that when they're on, and most nights they're on, they have nights like against Georgia the other night where they certainly start slow and pick things up, but that doesn't happen super often. When they're on, I think they can drop 100 on most teams in the country. They have such a dynamic set of scorers in their front and their back court, and they've really started to establish some depth in their back court, especially players stepping. I mean, you could say that about the front court too, like Thomas Haas stepping up for Alex Condit, but they've got guards, some that people might not know their name, like Urban Klavsar, stepping up when they had multiple injuries at guard, and all of a sudden he's popping off as a shooter. They've got guys who can step in and do it. And when you've got that and you've got those players starting to emerge in January and in February, that tells me that they certainly can make a long push here in the coming weeks. I'm curious to see what they do in the SEC tournament, because last year, they made that push. Micah Hanlogton suffers his injury that really rattles them. They drop out in the first round of the tournament. I could see them maybe taking their foot off the gas come Nashville, come the SEC tournament with their eyes on March, or the rest of March, I guess I should say, because they've got a team that I really think can, I don't want to say will or could go the whole way, but I wouldn't blame them whatsoever for believing that they can do that.
All right, Zach, thank you so much for your time. It's damn glad we're damn glad to have you back covering SEC football. But I know you enjoyed your time covering the NFL. But before you go, can you tell my audience how to follow you and how to find your work?
Yeah, absolutely, man. I appreciate you having me on as always. You guys can find me on Twitter at Zach, ZACH underscore Goodall, and all of my work now over at Swamp 247.
All right, thank you so much, Zach.